I guess there is somewhat of a bit of irony in the fact that we're devoting our study today to honesty and telling the truth 2 days before an election. We think about the state of politics, and certainly within our own culture as well, that oftentimes politicians don't tell the truth. They need to say something in order to be elected, and so they make a number of promises, make a number of vows, and they say, if I am elected, then I will do this. The election takes place, the person is elected, and what's the next thing we hear? Well, the situation isn't exactly like what I thought it was going to be before I was elected, and therefore, and it begins to sound very much like where we read from Ecclesiastes 5 this morning, where a vow was made in haste, a promise was made in haste, and that's not going to be fulfilled. Yet, what we've got to understand, though, is that God expects for our words to be embedded with honesty. That when you and I are speaking, we are going to tell things that are the truth. And so this morning, we took a look at what the Old Testament tells us about vows. And we made 3 points from that. We said, first of all, that God is very clear in His Old Testament teaching on taking vows, that we had better tread very carefully when we use His name. Now, going back to you shall not take the name of the Lord in vain, either in action or words, is what He tells us. We also noted that haste usually does make waste. That if we are taking vows without thinking them through, if the Israelites were saying that they would dedicate something to the Lord without thinking about it, there were problems that resulted, penalties that resulted from that. And thirdly, we said that evil lurks in the presence of good. Whenever the people of the Old Testament would take a vow, they were doing it typically in a show of faith. However, there was always the danger that that vow would not be fulfilled. And so the question that we left off with this morning is what happens concerning vows when we reach the New Testament? When we begin looking through the pages of what we're under, what does God tell us about vows? And it's actually very, very little. If you note in the New Testament, depending on your translation, there's going to be very few mentions of the word vow. In fact, in the ESV translation, which I would think would be fairly typical of most of the ones that would be used, there are only 3 times that the word vow is actually brought up in the New Testament. One of those being the vow that Herod took when the young woman danced before him and he vowed that he would give up to half his kingdom and ended up having to get the head of John the Baptist for her. There was a vow that was mentioned. The 2 other occasions actually deal with the Apostle Paul. There was a time in Acts chapter 18 and verse 18 where it says that Paul places himself under a vow. And another time, also in the book of Acts, where in chapter 21, verse 23, there's a discussion of 4 men who are placed under a vow, and the apostle has some dealings with that. The latter 2 of these occasions basically boil down to becoming all things to all men. The apostle Paul had entered into these vows because he needed to have that opportunity, that in with these Jewish people, so that he could then preach to them the gospel of Jesus Christ. What we never find in the New Testament is any case where Christians are placing themselves under a vow, using the term vow anyway, when it comes to their dealings with Jesus Christ. And as we consider that, we need to understand that this is not saying that this side of the cross, we're somehow under this lesser scope of honesty. That's not it at all. In fact, it would be just the opposite. Where God had expectations for His people in the Old Testament, He certainly has expectations of His people who have seen the cross, who have seen the death and the resurrection of His Son. And so as we consider that, this evening I want us to talk about honesty as it relates to the New Testament. The idea of letting our yes be yes and our no be no. And although the term vow is not going to come into this, as we described this morning, nonetheless, God is very serious that when we say we're going to do something, we follow through. So let's look then at where all of this begins in relation to us. And I think it begins when we talk about the Pharisees. You and I both know that by the time Christ made His earthly appearance, the Pharisees were recognized as those who were the ones who knew the law better than anyone else. And that was probably the case, at least having a rote knowledge of it. The problem, however, is that they had taken the law and they had so polluted it that at times you didn't know if they were trying to please God or trying to please themselves. In fact, several of the times Jesus will point out it was the latter of those. The things they were doing were for themselves. And so within this, we find Jesus' teaching coming into place. Let's remember from this morning another point. God never required the taking of a vow. In the Old Testament, you never find an occasion where God said, it is your duty to take this vow. The reason that they would take it was completely voluntary. However, God, as He looked down on the people, He realized that vows were being used for all kinds of things. So within the law of Moses, two reasons, He began to regulate vows, not require them, but to regulate them if they were taken. One of which, He says, I only want you doing it in serious matters. As He talks to the people of Israel through the law of Moses, He says the only time you are to take a vow is when you are very sober in what you're doing. It's not something that you flippantly enter into. And the second point then, tying in very much with that, is that it was regulated to keep sin away. To keep people from entering into things they had no business entering in. To keep them from using the name of God in a way that they had no business using that name. So it's into this world that Jesus comes. And by the time of Christ's days on the earth, the Pharisees had taken the concept of vows and they had turned it less from a law into more of a loophole. As they began to use vows, what they were doing is seeking to find ways that they could actually be dishonest in what they were doing. I think that gives us a clear picture of what religion was like amongst the Jews. That here, this group that was considered to be one of the most knowledgeable about the law, that they had taken a key part of the law and they had turned it into something that was basically used for lying. Let's take an example of this over in Matthew chapter 23. Matthew chapter 23, we know that Jesus is speaking directly to the Pharisees here. And I want you to listen to what He has to say concerning what they've done to the concept of taking a vow, what they've done in association with the word that they speak. So we look in chapter 23, going down to verse 16. Jesus begins by saying, "Woe to you blind guides who say if anyone swears by the temple, it is nothing. But if anyone swears by the gold of the temple, he is bound by his oath. You blind fools, for which is greater, the gold or the temple that has made the gold sacred? And you say, if anyone swears by the altar, it is nothing. But if anyone swears by the gift that is on the altar, he is bound by his oath. You blind men, which is greater, the gift or the altar that makes the gift sacred? So whoever swears by the altar swears by it and by everything on it. And whoever swears by the temple swears by it and by him who dwells in it. And whoever swears by heaven swears by the throne of God and by him who sits upon it." I want you to think about making a deal with a group like this. Here is someone who comes to you and they say to you, this person says to you, "Look, I swear by the temple that I am going to carry out this action." And the action doesn't get carried out. And so you go and question the person. And the person says, "Oh, you must have misunderstood. I swore by the temple. I didn't swear by the gold in the temple. And therefore, because I didn't swear by the gold in the temple, my vow is non-binding." Someone says, "I swore by the altar, not by the gift that was on the altar. My vow is not binding." You see what they've done? And Jesus says, "You fools, you blind men, do you not realize that what you're doing is you're taking in all of this what is holy and you're binding yourself to it and then you're completely ignoring it because of the verbiage that you're using?" In the Pharisees' mind, the thing they had to avoid was perjury. As long as they could avoid perjury, everything was okay. In their minds, they had not violated the law. What Jesus says to them is what you have completely missed is the trickery that you're using so that you think you can get away with something when really what you're doing is lying. What you're doing is calling the name of God into something that you never intended to do in the first place. Let's note one other passage in this regard. Look with me over to Mark chapter 7. This is not exactly the same, and I realize that, but I think this passage does give us a bit more into their mindset. Here is a case where, again, they're being very deceptive. And if you look down to verse 10 of Mark chapter 7, Jesus is talking to them about their traditions, their vain traditions. And he says, beginning in verse 10, Moses said, "Honor your father and your mother, and whoever reviles father or mother must surely die. But you say, if a man tells his father or his mother, whatever you would have gained from me is Corban, that is, given to God, then you no longer permit him to do anything for his father and mother, thus making void the word of God by your tradition that you have handed down, and many such things you do." Here was a case where something was owed to the temple, but also owed to their parents. And so the Pharisees are killing two birds with one stone. They say, "Mom, Dad, what I was planning on giving to you, I've dedicated that to God, and I can't go back on my vow. I've dedicated it so I don't have to take care of you." Now, that's the world Jesus lived in. And that's the mindset where there is deception, where there's trickery, where they're trying in all of these different ways to get out of performing what they have promised to do. And therefore, we could just simply say that the whole concept of vows had become a mockery. What God had intended to be sacred and holy, the Pharisees had turned simply into a series of loopholes to get away with their lives. And so with that, Jesus then speaks to them in the Sermon on the Mount. And he said, concerning these things, I want to tell you about honesty. This is a familiar passage, but let's look back to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, we know that he's clearing up all of these things that the Pharisees had taken and that they had so mutilated. Listen to what he says concerning honesty, concerning your word. In this particular case, with the idea of oaths, which would be very akin to the idea of vows. He says, "Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not swear falsely, but you shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn.' But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by earth, for it is the footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil." And so as we consider here what Jesus is saying, as I mentioned this morning, it's similar to what he's just said prior to this concerning divorce. He said, "You've taken this and you've made such a problem out of it. What I'm telling you is, take it back to the creation standard. Take it back to the way that God intended." And so what's he saying by this? Well, what he's saying is that when we are giving someone our word, I believe, whether God or man, he is saying to us, there is no need for a vow or for an oath. Someone who knows you, someone with whom you have dealings, someone who knows your character, he says, all you need to do is to let your yes be yes and your no be no. This particular passage typically comes up many times when we're discussing matters of legality. Is it wrong for a Christian to take an oath in a court of law? Is it wrong for a Christian to put his hand on the Bible and say, "I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth"? There have been various groups who've said, yes, that's a problem. And they said, we're going to change that to affirm. So if you go into a court of law, now it's do you swear or affirm? Well, those two words mean the same thing. It's a matter of semantics there. It's the same idea. Someone who has a problem with that, I would never try to talk them out of it. I would never say, well, you need to do that. If that's a conscientious problem, that's fine. However, I believe as we look at this section, Jesus does not have the legality frame of mind here. He's not saying, well, you know, you're going before this Roman judge who has no idea who you are, and he's somehow got to believe that your yes is going to be yes. No. We understand that this section was directed at the Pharisaical teaching that had become so corrupt. And what he's saying is, for people who know you, that's all they need. They don't need to hear about swearing by the gold of the temple. They don't need to hear about swearing by the sacrifice on the altar. What they simply need to know is that you can be depended on for your words. And so then, he says, I want to stop all this Pharisaical chicanery. I want to stop all this business of tricking and fooling and trying to find loopholes. I want you to let your honesty shine through in everything that you do. So, in many ways, the words that Jesus spoke fulfill the same purpose as the law. Look at verse 37 one more time. Let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than that comes from evil. Is that not the purpose of what the law did with vows? To keep evil at bay wherever good is, evil is lurking. We made that point this morning. Here we find that the purpose of Jesus' words are to prevent this trickery that was going on in the minds of the Pharisees. Interestingly, James will repeat the same command a little bit later on, chapter 5 and verse 12. Almost verbatim, he says the same thing of Jesus. And his point, just as Jesus' point says, whatever you promise, you deliver. Now, with all of that being said, let's get specific. What do we do when we talk about our honesty with God? Do you notice the words that Jesus used here in chapter 5? When he says, do not swear by the throne of God or by the earth or by Jerusalem. Why? All of these things relate to God. And I want you to note once again with me down in verse 36, do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. What's he saying by that? He's saying something very akin to what the writer of Ecclesiastes said when he said, God is in heaven and you are on earth. God knows what's going on. You only know what's in front of your face. And therefore, don't start making commitments that you cannot fulfill. So what does that mean then concerning our honesty when it comes to our dealings with God? Though it is never mentioned in the New Testament, as we've already noted, with the word vow, probably the closest we come is the idea of conversion, the idea of baptism. That is sealing a vow that we have made to God. That when we're buried in the waters of baptism, what we're saying is that God is now in complete and full control. And we understand that that is all-encompassing. And if we didn't, we need go no further than Romans chapter 12 and verse 1, where he says, I appeal to you therefore, brothers, by the mercy of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God. He says, everything about you now belongs to God. When you have made the commitment to be a faithful child of His, you in a sense have made a promise that everything now belongs to Him. So therefore, do we need to start pulling things out of the Old Testament? Do we need to start saying, well, now that I'm a Christian, I'm going to make a vow about the use of my time. I am vowing to the Lord that every Thursday, that every Monday, that every Saturday, I'm going to devote the entire day to the work of God. No, we don't need to make a vow like that. Why? What we've already said is all-encompassing. We think about Ephesians chapter 5, verses 15 and 16, where the apostle says, look carefully then how you walk. Not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time or redeeming the time because the days are evil. So do I need to make a specific vow to the Lord saying, I am going to devote this amount of time to you? I believe we have that covered. Because if I have presented myself as a living sacrifice to God, it takes care of it. What I'm understanding in that is every time I have the opportunity to serve God, I'm going to serve God. What about someone who says, well, I'm going to make a vow concerning my use of money. I'm going to vow that I will always give X percentage of my paycheck. Again, this is already taken care of. Remember what the apostle wrote to the Corinthians? He said, the point is, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. And whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly. And then pay attention to this. Or under compulsion. For God loves a cheerful giver. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe we find anywhere in the New Testament where we have somebody taking a vow that they're going to give X number of dollars into the Lord's work. I suppose Ananias and Sapphira would come the closest to that. And we see what happens when they lied to the Holy Spirit about such matters. The point that I want us to see is that when I say I am becoming a Christian, I am giving myself totally to God. My time, my money, my talents, my efforts, everything is given to Him. Therefore, there's no need for these add-on vows. Let me make a second point with this. When we think about honesty with God, we also need to understand that it's our responsibility to live up to the commitment that we've made. Remember the Pharisees trying to find loopholes, trying to be duplicitous in their dealings with God? That never needs to describe us. And we must be very careful that there is no trickery involved. Someone becomes a Christian. And the person then immediately begins to make excuses. Well, I can't be at the worship assembly because. I can't read my Bible because. I can't do this because. None of those excuses are going to fly with God. Nothing where we're trying to sound like we're honest people, though in our hearts there is deception trying to get out of the commitment that we've made. None of those things are going to work because of our second point here. God will not tolerate hypocrisy. We go back to a well-known Old Testament passage. As the Lord was sending Samuel to find the next king, he had been looking through the sons of Jesse, and the Lord said this to him, "Do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." Isn't that what the writer of Ecclesiastes told us? God is in heaven. God knows what's going on. I never need to try to trick Him. And I never need to try to play the hypocrite. Because He knows. And I would add on to that, we never need to try to bargain with God. Maybe we don't have a lot of problems with this, but sometimes you'll have people who will get in desperate straits and they'll start trying to bargain with the Lord and they'll say, "Lord, if you'll just let me have this job, just let me get this job, I vow to you 25% of my paycheck is going to go to your work." Or someone gets in a mess and they say to the Lord, "Lord, if you'll just get me out of this mess, I'll never miss another assembly of the Lord's people." Don't make vows with things God already expects you to do. If God has given commands, you don't make deals with Him on that. It's almost as if we're trying to say that we hold something that the Lord really needs. I can assure you, the Lord is missing nothing because of us. He is complete. He is total. We're not withholding. And what that does is simply takes us back to that idea of cheapening His name, using His name in a very haphazard fashion. And God says, stay away from that kind of thing. So when it comes to God, let's let our yes be yes. That if we have committed ourselves to the Lord, we fulfill that commitment that we've made. Well, what about our fellow man? Perhaps that's where we struggle more. the honesty that we have with each other. I tell you, you sit down and you start reading passages on honesty, and boy, you will find a number of them scattered throughout the Scriptures. The book of Proverbs probably holds the most in such a compact place that you just start going through them and you read about the things that the Lord hates, and lying lips are one of them. And He says, don't have deceitful lips. And He says, let your lips have integrity. All of these passages that are saying you need to be honest and you need to be truthful. But then we come to the New Testament and God doesn't stop. He says, going over to Ephesians chapter 4, therefore, having put away falsehood, let each one of you speak the truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. We continue on, book of Colossians chapter 3, do not lie to one another, seeing that you have put off the old self with its practices. We think about what Peter says over in 1 Peter chapter 3. He says, for whoever desires to love life and see good days, let him keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. Over and over and over again, God is not saying, take a vow so everybody will know you're speaking the truth. Swear by the gold of the temple so everyone can know you're honest. No. What He's saying is, you have a heart that is totally dedicated and totally committed to honesty. And so what will that mean then for us? Well, if we have that, these principles then mean I don't need to go around like the Pharisees making this vow or that vow. Why? Because those who know me know that my yes is yes, and my no is no. Let me just say that this is certainly true of what we would categorize as the big commitments. When we give our word to somebody, when we have said, yes, this is what I'm going to do, that's all that's needed. And perhaps the biggest commitment that most of us will make in that regard is when we put a ring on someone's finger. When we marry someone, have you ever noticed that in the Bible there is no marriage vow? That'd be a little surprising to a lot of folks. I challenge you. Look through the Scriptures. Do you find any passage that talks about the vow that you're going to make? In fact, from what I can tell, of what we read from the New Testament anyway, it was not even a religious ceremony. It was much more of a legal ceremony, it appears, from secular history. But what's happened over the years is we have taken that and we've said, well, this is such a godly thing. Surely we need to make some big commitments. I'm about a week and a half shy of my 20th wedding anniversary. I can't remember what the man said that night. But I can almost guarantee you that if I pulled out the VHS tape and stuck it in, I would hear something like, do you, in the presence of God and these witnesses, do I need to do that? Do I need to make a vow like that? Well, actually, as a Christian, when I say, I do, that's all that's needed. Why? Because I understand where God says, I am to show faithfulness to my wife. I understand where God says, I am to be the head of my family. I understand where God says, you are to cherish your wife. I understand those things. And when I say yes, that really should be all my wife needs and anyone else who hears needs, because they should know me as a man of honor, as someone who gives his word and then keeps it. When we say yes, that's what we mean. But I would suggest to you that this is also true in the small commitments. And maybe this is where we have the greater difficulty. We tell someone, you loan me $20, I'll pay you back on Friday. I can tell you, having been here at the building now for several months on a regular basis, there is a steady stream of people who come by. And I have heard every promise being made. If you'll just give me some money for gas, I'll have it back to you. I'm still waiting on that one, by the way. That was about 2 months ago. If you'll just give me money for food, I'll have it back to you next week. I'm still waiting on that one. You know what people are doing? They're lying. And after the last one, I finally just came to the conclusion I'm going to say from here on out, do not promise me anything. Because it's a lie. Don't know if I'll tell them that. But most of the time, it's going to be a lie. There is no more intention to do that. But like the Pharisees, they're saying, if you'll just do this, I'll do this for you. We got to be very careful about those kinds of things, even with people of integrity. That if we tell someone, I'll pay you back Friday, I pay you back Friday. And if I sign on the dotted line and I tell a bank, I'll make a mortgage payment to you for the next 15 to 30 years, I make the mortgage payment for the next 15 or 30 years. And if I borrow money from an institution and they say it's due in 1 year, they have the money back in 1 year. Why? Because my yes is yes. And I don't need to start taking a bunch of vows to try to make that sound more serious. And I would suggest to us, even in things that seem so little, if I tell somebody I'm going to be there at 1:30, I'm there at 1:30. If I tell somebody I'm going to do this for you, I do this for you. Here is one who knows that when they hear from me, it's going to be honest. But what if I fail? What if I make commitments and I have failed in those commitments, large or small? I need to realize the first thing is I seek the Lord's forgiveness. Because the Lord has said to me, I have expectations of you as a child of mine. I have expectations for the way you're going to behave yourself. And if I am not behaving in that way, as with any sin, I have brought shame on the name of the Lord. And I must get that straightened out with Him. And once that's done, I then seek the forgiveness of those who trust Him. Large or small, if someone can come to me and say, this is what you said, but your yes was not yes, there is no excuse that needs to be made there. If the situation allowed me to do it, and I just simply did not, the only thing left is to seek the person's forgiveness. And then, to begin rebuilding and to give no opportunity for doubt. Sometimes we think people are awfully cruel. You know, here we ask forgiveness and people are still not quite as trusting. It takes a while to rebuild trust. When it's been broken, when we've given our word on something and it's not been done, it takes a while. And I have to realize that. And I imagine all of us could probably think of times in our lives when we have told someone something and then we didn't follow through and that person just doesn't have a lot of confidence in us anymore. We have to keep on trying. That's what the Lord says to do. And He says to do it quickly because this is such an important concept. And if we want to boil everything down to what we've talked about both this morning and this evening, it just comes to this. I've got to be a person who has the trust of those around me because I've earned it. Because I have shown myself honest, a person of integrity. And if I failed on that, what they are seeing in me is a person who is trying to get back on the right path. And you see, if I'm that kind of person, there is no need for a vow. I don't have to swear by anything. I don't have to call on the name of the Lord. Here is someone who knows because I have committed myself to God. I am committed to His ways. And I hope that's how all of us are viewing these commitments that we make.